Tennessee Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan right now. Brought to you by your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. And Specs, how about them savings from Specs, proud partner of the Dallas Cowboys. We bring you our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Howdy, sir.
Let's go. Let's get it going.
All right. So that seemed to be the theme of the day during the joint practice as well. Were you familiar with the wrestler Scott Steiner before you saw his son suplex Jalen Thompson?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Were you familiar with the wrestler Scott Steiner before you saw him suplex
his son suplex Jalen Thompson?
I did not know that.
That is fair.
Wait, before we go any further, what are the rules on the S word?
Suplex?
No, don't say that word.
Okay. Can I say S word?
Yes, you can.
You can say S word all the time.
Exactly.
Okay. I didn't want to get you guys or myself in trouble.
Oh, Shoddy said the S word a lot yesterday, right?
Yes, he did. And then when he walked off, somebody repeated it, and then he spelled it for us.
Oh.
You know how to spell it?
Yeah, I know how to spell most words. I know how to spell most words.
So give us some insight then. I mean, that's pretty good insight right there about how he felt about maybe all the fights or maybe just specifically Ezeraku.
Well, look, he wasn't the only person out that threw punches, okay? I saw Reddy Stewart throw a right, a left, a right, and a left, right? But there was such a melee going on, it was hard to pick out who was doing what. And as he pointed out, the Cowboys weren't the only culprit here.
For sure.
And what happened, as a matter of fact, it started with the Saints. When it was early in the first team portion of practice, Javonte Williams was running the ball. He turned the corner, probably gained about 5 or 10 yards, and he was ready to go out of bounds. And the Saints just flung him out of bounds like a full tackle. And the offensive lineman, rightly so, said, "Hey, you don't mess with my guy." And it started, and both sidelines emptied. And then it was basically one of those baseball brawls where everybody runs out and does a lot of pushing. But there was a couple over on the defensive side that things got pretty heated. And you know what? I know he said he was disappointed. He said it was sloppy. He didn't like all the fighting. But I'm guessing when he went to bed last night, he was gritting his teeth and go, "Darn right, we're not taking nothing from nobody." And I don't blame them. As bad as this defense was last year, these guys didn't back down. If the Saints wanted to go, they went. And to me, it's a good thing. Now, you don't want to get thrown out of a game. I get it. And for Ezeraku, it was the second time, right?
Yeah.
Once with his own guys and then in this one. But you know what? Charles Haley didn't back down from anybody, and that was part of his deal. People were scared to play against him because he would do anything possible to win at the snap of the ball. So, to me, I thought it was a good thing. I liked them stepping up to support their own guys and make sure that some team doesn't come in here named the Saints, not acting unsaintly.
You know,
don't let them come marching in.
That's right. Since you mentioned the fights and kind of the similarity to baseball brawl, I meant to ask you this. Did you see that Cubs and White Sox fan fight in the bleachers at Wrigley?
No, I did not.
Holy moly. Just type
I need to go look that up.
Cubs White Sox fan fight. You'll find it straight away.
How'd the Southsider do?
The Southsiders, there was multiple of them. They ended up victorious.
Okay, good. But they lost the baseball game.
Yeah, and there was a couple points where I was like, I think you proved your point. This is going too far. So take a look at it. Let me know what you think about that. All right, you mentioned Reddy Stewart as well. How do you think Reddy Stewart looked yesterday, and does he continue to show some versatility in terms of he could be useful for you as a safety in addition to a cornerback?
Yes, and he's been doing that here quite a bit lately. It started when they had some injuries at safety. Jalen Thompson was out. The Childress, and so they needed some safety help, so they started moving them to safety. So again, slot corner, safety, special teams. He will play special teams for you, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is as poorly as the Cowboys played on special teams when they construct this first 53-man roster, I think some consideration has to be given to guys that maybe aren't starters or initial backups, but they're special team dudes, and they need some of those these guys on the roster.
How far away is Von Miller in the ramp-up process? Like, how far does he feel like he needs?
Yeah, I would think, you know, they'll work him out. And they know what he's been doing, right? B.T. Jordan, he'd been the Cowboys' defensive consultant. He had been working out with him, so they knew where he was all along. He went through the stretch yesterday before the scrimmage. I think he did maybe a few individual drills, not too much. He won't practice. He'll ramp up tomorrow, and then you travel. He's not going to play in the game. And then when they get back to Dallas, they'll be able to test and see, you know, just how much he might be able to do in those first couple of practices back at the Star. But when he finished his press conference yesterday, the first person he talked to was Britt Brown, and I'm sure Britt and him talked in like, okay, here's the plan, here's how we're gonna get you ready. He doesn't need to, you know, be ready until September 13th.
How far is Von Miller from getting Hunter Lipke's number?
If Lipke likes chicken, he may be right there by it, right?
Yeah.
He offered him a lifetime supply of chicken.
Because he has
you pass that up?
Hell no, chicken's delicious.
He runs a chicken farm, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think it's Greener Pastures chicken.
So last time we failed you on this, Mickey, because we didn't ask about Dustin Hoffman. So I need to know this go around. Movie producer Jerry Bruckheimer was a visitor yesterday. Do you have a favorite Jerry Bruckheimer movie? Because he's worth $1 billion.
Yeah, I can't help you on that one.
Mm. All right.
I could tell you Drew Brees was here.
Yeah,
oh.
Drew Brees is hanging out too, yeah.
Okay. Do you want, I'm going to give you some of his filmography to help you out.
Okay.
I just want to let you know.
I'm not a current movie buff, but give me a shot.
Okay. Flashdance, Days of Thunder, The Rock, Con Air, Armageddon, Enemy of the State, Pearl Harbor, Black Hawk Down, Top Gun, Bad Boys, Pirates of the Caribbean, the National Treasure movies. He's done a lot of stuff.
Yes, he has, and I've seen many of those, right?
Okay, great.
Yeah, but I didn't know who produced them.
Well, I'm sure he's okay with that because, like I said, he's now worth $1 billion.
Yeah,
so
he
ain't worried about little old me. Yeah.
Or me,
Billy Zane was also there. I saw Nate post a picture with him. Do you know who Billy Zane is?
I've heard the name.
There you go.
He was the mean fiancé in Titanic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And in the terrible movie The Phantom. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. It's pretty awful.
Michael Irvin was here.
Okay, see, now we're talking. I saw Michael Irvin pick up a kid from the other side of the fence and like let him walk around with him for a minute.
Right.
And I was just like, it's got to be kind of awesome when Michael Irvin walks around at Cambridge.
Yes.
Just because he is that personality that he is.
Sean Lee was here.
See, that's another one that he's sitting there going, how many analytics can I talk about right now?
Matt Vanderbeek.
Ooh.
That one goes right by you.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Mickey.
Special teams ace.
He ended up
getting signed as a free agent, I think maybe by Washington, because he had played so well on special teams.
Look at that.
And he lives in the area.
Okay.
Any other ones?
I'm trying to go through.
I mean, you've already gotten
the
Matt
guys
Vanderbeek,
I've seen. Yeah. James Washington was here Monday.
I love James Washington, dude. We had him on a couple years ago. He's great, man. He's fantastic.
All right. Anything else, whether it's risers or fallers coming out of joint practice? Look, I don't want to make it sound like we're trying to beat up on this guy, but feels like it was maybe kind of underwhelming for Nate Thomas again, was it not?
Well, they moved him.
Right.
We talked about it yesterday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They went from left tackle to right tackle. Shelton still was at left tackle on the second team. Yeah, he needs to pick it up. And here's the concern. If it's not him, who's your backup swing tackle?
Yeah, we were talking about that. I don't know.
Right? And I don't know that, you know. Now, Shelton at least went back and played left tackle, and that's where he played at Penn State. But that's asking a lot for a rookie to be your backup swing tackle, right?
Especially at a time when I feel like people in the fan base, I don't know, the organization, I don't know how you totally feel about it, maybe aren't thrilled about your actual starting tackles.
Well, if they can keep Tyler Guyton healthy, right, that would be a start. And then Terrence Steele, you know, he needs to be a little bit more consistent. So I looked at the list of still available free agent tackles, but, boy, they're all 30-something years old, and, you know, no one's touching them. And now, do you want to bring one of those guys in as your backup swing tackle? But there's not a lot of choices, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Because in the NFL, as we know, there's not enough talented offensive linemen to basically supply your first team offensive line,
yeah,
let alone a backup, right? So sometimes maybe if you err on experience and just hope that, you know, you stay as healthy as possible. But I think it's something to keep an eye on, especially in this next preseason game, when, you know, the second line and the third line are going to be out there playing. And you got to be somewhat concerned at this point going into that game. So that if anybody needs anything to watch, just watch the offensive line. Now, the first line, whatever you think of Guyton, whatever you think of Terrence Steele, they did a pretty darn good job against the Saints. Dak Prescott was on fire. I saw the first thing someone said about Dak Prescott was an interception. Well, he was throwing the ball in the wind, and it got held up, and it was behind the receiver. He threw about two or three deep touchdown passes, and one beauty to George Pickens, who contorted his body, twisted, and caught the ball like going backwards, and went to the ground and held on. It was an unbelievable catch. Mingo had a big catch, too. So the offense, I thought, was doing well. Now, Jaden Blue did start the practice. He had a little bit of a shoulder. He had a really good run, about 30 yards, and then they pulled him out of the practice out of precaution, I think.
Well, we appreciate the insight as always. We will catch up with you once more tomorrow.
And I'll be back with a whole lot of S tomorrow.
And watch that fight. Watch that
I will.
Fight.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, will Corey have the heart to tell Skip that he did not wear a tank top yesterday? We will find out when we talk with the Rangers manager right here on The Fan.
He doesn't let me throw out the pitch then.
Well, good point. Could happen. We'll find out. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through The Fan right now. Brought to you by Trajan Wealth and Tropical Smoothie Cafe. It is time to talk to Texas Rangers manager Skip Schumacher. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Man, we're doing great. I hope you are also doing great off of a big win. My question is, would you like to talk first about that win, tank tops, or one of us throwing out the first pitch at a Rangers game?
It's always good talking to you all after a win, so let's start with that one.
Okay.
Tank tops.
All right. So let's start with the win. I know we have asked you this before, but once again, can you put into perspective how important Cal Quantrill has been, not only yesterday, but for this season? And then maybe tell us about some big-time defensive plays by Cody Freeman in that first inning.
Yeah, I've known Cal for a long time. We drafted him in San Diego when I was there and saw him kind of come up through the ranks. And then obviously we traded him to Cleveland. And then now here we are again together in Texas, and had a you know, really tough conversation early on with him in the WBC and, you know, not really having a chance to, you know, make the rotation or make the team just because of limited time coming back in spring training. And then, you know, so he's been thrusted in a lot of different roles, AAA starter, come up here, long man, spot start, you know, high leverage in the ninth inning. And then all of a sudden, you know, injury comes up and then we give him the rotation spot, does really well. Bradford comes back and have to put him back in the rotation. Then because of need, here he is again. And all along, all he said, hey, you know, whatever you need, all I care about is winning. And that goes a long way in the manager's seat, because those are tough conversations to give a veteran pitcher who, you know, deserved to be in a rotation or deserved to be in more high leverage spots in the bullpen. And credit to him, he's just built up during the regular season, which is so hard in the middle of a year, and has provided a lot of quality innings for us. And we needed that win yesterday big time to start off a good homestand, hopefully, and he provided that.
And then your thoughts on Cody Freeman setting the tone defensively early on.
Yeah, game-changing two plays, really, in the first inning, the one into the dugout and the diving play in the hole. You know, we could be down 1-0 in the first inning and, you know, it changes the momentum a little bit. And so instead, it's a zero and we come in and we score first, and we're really good when we score first. So that was an unbelievable play, obviously, in the hole and then in the dugout.
I'm curious, even with a guy like Freeman, too, when you're talking about Cal and the kind of the things that he's had to adapt to this year, obviously, you know, you hear about athletes being, you know, creatures of habit and wanting to know what they're doing and all that. But when you have an adaptable guy like that, how many of those kind of guys do you want on your team? Do you want a whole full team of those guys?
No, I think you'd lose with a lot of Skip Schumachers on the team, right? you need talent, but you also need guys like Cody Freeman that fill in and can play everywhere and provide that spark. And I think Cody Freeman can be an everyday player. There's no doubt about it. We had JJ there, and we've missed JJ for, you know, the last, you know, few weeks. I mean, middle of the order bat, 800 OPS, killing lefties. I mean, JJ was having a great year. And, you know, Cody was going to fill in. Then he had the neck surgery, you know, that, you know, really hindered him. And he's got a big old scar on his neck. I mean, he was out for a little while. And he's come back and provided, you know, a spark for us and takes quality at bats. You saw what he did last year. So it's good to see him back and feeling good at the plate, obviously making some good defensive plays. But, yeah, I think Cody can absolutely be an everyday player just because of, you know, everything he provides defensively and offensively.
You know, you mentioned Josh Young, so obviously I got to ask. I know he started jogging. He's been doing some baseball activities, including ground balls and hitting. How are y'all, where are y'all at with him, and is there some semblance of, I guess, an updated timeline?
Yeah, the updated timeline is he's still doing his jogging, you know, kind of progression and hopefully ramping up into a sprint here soon, which, as you know, that just takes some time. And he's doing the defensive work. He's doing the swings. All of that feels good. It's the running that hasn't, you know, really progressed like we wanted it to. And so he's doing it now. He'll do it again today. Felt okay. I don't think he's 100% yet. So it's still going to be another, you know, hopefully another week or so. But, you know, I can't give you like this hard timeline of when we'll see him on the field.
Skip, I'd love for you to be able to predict the future and say, yes, Corey Seager will turn the corner, is turning the corner. I know exactly when with a guy like that. But when, you know, you get a couple of hits from him and it looks like things are feeling pretty good. But for him, it's got to be like, this has got to be a frustrating kind of season for him personality wise. How do you kind of navigate working with a guy that's been at that superstar level and getting him to have that belief and faith that he's going to be back to what he typically is?
Yeah, no, you hit it on the head there with as far as the frustration he has by not being able to post every day like he wants to. He knows where we're at in the season. He knows what he provides, and he wants to be out there. It's the reality is, you know, the majority of the season, he couldn't, as much as he wanted to, he couldn't. So you see what he provides. Last night, it was a really good sign of him diving into second base on a double, head first. You haven't seen that, you know, the majority of the year because he couldn't do it. And now you see that first, he's gone first to third. So he's swinging, he's making the plays. And then it's always, you know, how does he feel the next day and then the day after that? And, you know, so far it's been good. So, you know, hopefully we can get him and ride him the next 30-plus games and not really look back. But it's been frustrating for him. Obviously, you know, I want him in the lineup, of course, mm-hmm. But it doesn't compare to the frustration that he's had, you know, himself, you know, just trying to be out there for his team and his teammates.
You know, talking about that play, Jake Berger said after the game, man, that play fired me up. So not just about Seager, but do you feel like as of late, perhaps the team's been more aggressive on the base paths, and is that going to be a possible way to get out of the funk that y'all have been in?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's just part of the identity, and it's always easy to run the bases more when you have more people on base,
sure.
Right? So I think that is the what's lost in this is we just don't want to run into outs to say we're trying to advance bases or trying to steal more bases. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, we're stealing bases at an 80% clip, pretty good ratio, success rate, but, you know, we just don't want to run into outs, but we got to get guys on base to produce that. And I think the best base running teams do have a lot of guys on base often, so they can take chances and correct itself if it doesn't work out and learn from these moments. But I do feel like lately we have been going first and third more, and you know, doing that part of the game has looked better the last couple games. But also we've had more extra base hits and more opportunity to do that, and I think it's all related.
Now, Skip, I've actually wanted to ask you about this particular player all season. I just never had the right opportunity. I think this kind of fits a little bit. And I know I'm actually about to talk about something we don't talk about, and that is that Cardinals team, Kevin.
Oh, no.
Albert Pujols, you got to watch him and, like, the way he prepped and the way he did his work. And I know, like, when he hit that grand slam against us, it pretty much went through the back of the stadium and deflated an entire stadium. I'm sure that kind of stuff gave you guys energy. Is it always the best player on the team that provides that energy, or is it like the rare moments that they do certain things that just kind of takes everything to another level? And where do you feel like this team gets its best energy from?
Yeah, I don't want to bring up that year either, but you did.
Thank you.
You know, August 23rd of that year, we were out of the wild card 10.5 games, August 23rd. And so there, I actually was pitching in a blowout game, a 13-2 blowout game. I faced Rod Barajas that day, and it didn't look good. And so to your point is, you know, as far as who provides that spark, well, Albert was injured at the time. And so it's other guys that can absolutely provide that spark. Now, seeing Corey Seager, you know, go ahead and dive, you know, into second base and firing up the troops, your best player doing that, obviously that sets the tone a little, you know, and you always love seeing that part of it, and it fired everybody up. But I do think that there's other guys that can do that. Cody Freeman did it yesterday. Zeke Duran has done it all year.
Yeah.
You know, there's guys that do this. Jacob Blatts and Berger doing steamrolling, you know, after a big closing situation. So there are guys that can do it. But I just want to reiterate, like, there's no panic in this clubhouse. Like, we know where we're at in the season. We got to go. And, you know, I've been in spots where I've been in much worse situations as a player. So, you know, we know what we need to do. We got to start producing. It's you know, we talk about it, but we got to start producing.
Skip, one of the things Chris Young told us at the season opener, Kevin, I believe it was having a lineup with guys who know their roles and what their roles are. And we've talked about Wyatt Langford the other day. You brought up how he had three walks and how that helped you guys get a win. And I know Wyatt can crush. Like, we know he can crush the ball, but is his role kind of adaptable to, you got to be the complete package because getting on base, A number one, is the most important thing because of that speed?
Yeah, when you're not feeling good, all you want to do is hit your way out of it, right? Like that is the mindset. Like, if I'm in a funk, I'm going to hit my way out of it. I'm not going to see pitches and try to walk and kind of pass the baton. That's very hard to do. That's like a mature way to go about it. When I'm not feeling good, I got to grind my way, figure out some way to get on base for the guy behind me who might be feeling good until I feel good again. Then I'll swing my way out of it. That is not easy. He did that. Now he's starting to feel good again, and you see what happened, right? He walked three times. The next day hit a home run. He's feeling good right now, had a couple hits. So yes, it's a very, very, exciting player, obviously. But also you see the signs of maturity as well when you see the guys that go in funks and are taking the base when they don't feel good until they feel good again.
You know, I feel like that answer probably encapsulates your answer to my next question, but you've said this a couple of different times after the last road trip. We know we're better than this road trip. We know we're better than what the record says. With all due respect and factoring in the run differential and everything, I am really curious as to what makes you say that.
That we're in a good position to win still?
That you're better than what your record says and believe that you can play better. Like, I'm just curious about that line of thinking.
Yeah, in my seat, you have to have this crazy belief every single day. I've said it before that we're going to win every day. I mean, that is a non-negotiable from our staff. That's a non-negotiable for me, that when we enter, we out-energy the player and we're ready to go. And we have to give that clubhouse the belief that we are in this thing to win it. And there's no other way to think about it. So as far as like what I believe in, well, Jacob DeGrom felt really good after the bullpen session yesterday. We'll see what he looks like. JJ is running. That's a good sign. Robert Garcia is throwing his bullpens. That's a good sign. Jack Leiter's throwing tomorrow in a rehab game at 65 pitches. That's a good sign. So Corey Seager's playing in the lineup, and he's in the lineup hopefully every day now. So you start seeing a lot of these guys getting healthy and getting our full team back and Danny Jansen now back. Then you start seeing like, okay, if we know where we're at, we still have this belief. There's winners in that clubhouse that know what winning looks like and have been there before. Why not? What is there to, we put ourselves in this position, but the division is the division. So we're in a good spot. Let's see if we can make a run at this thing.
Now, I know it'll probably depend on how he is feeling today, but is the ideal plan for DeGrom to make his start tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't want to give like these I've said trending too often lately, so I don't want to like give you something that's not true. So when he comes in today, I think we'll have a better idea where we're at.
Now, Jake Berger said after the last loss to the A's that it's something you can't dwell on. Is that how you operate, you personally, or do you sometimes linger on particular losses or slumps, even though you know you probably shouldn't?
I dwell on it like that night because then I get on the computer and watch the game over again and, have my pity party a little bit. And then and then the next day I get ready to roll. So you're just not allowed to sulk in this game the next day. It's just that's just not being a pro and not exactly what I don't want from our staff. So absolutely that night you have some sleepless nights and you might have another drink of water or two and then figure out what it looks like the next day. And I think that's all part of this game. It's mental as a player. It's also mental as a coach and a manager. So trying to find, ways to stay positive through funks and to, get ready to go the next day is always the challenge at this level.
And then you just put like an extra plate or so on the bench press and that it helps you feel a little bit better.
Ooh.
Oh gosh, here we go.
Got to go work that out sometimes, Got to go get that in. So,
all right.
That's right.
So, I know y'all are focused on today's game. I did have a question about August 31st though. That night, our station is going to be doing the first pitch for the game and I won the drawing to throw out the very first pitch. However, my co-host, one of his lifelong dreams in the existence of the world is to throw out the first pitch at a Rangers game. I should just give him the pitch, right?
I think here's what you don't want. You don't want to have a cutoff man or relay man from the mound to the plate.
Sure.
So whoever has the ability to throw it from the pitcher's mound to the catcher, whoever's catching it, I think that's who you go with.
Well,
my
co-host Corey, every time we talked about this giveaway, he started doing his pitching motion and his son wants to practice with him. So it feels like they're like locked in on this thing.
I feel like you give it to him then. I mean, he wants it. You got to give it to him.
Don't shake him down. Just let him have it as a good friend.
Yeah, and you better hope he doesn't one-hop it.
Oh man, I'm gonna,
does that reflect on me?
I'm
if
gonna
he
be fine. No, I'm gonna be fine, dude. Trust me on this. I'm gonna be just fine. Actually, I might throw a little heat in there just to see.
Oh, okay. Well, as always, we appreciate the time. You guys have been
miles an hour.
Rocking and rolling on these Tuesdays. Congrats on the win. Best of luck against the Nationals this evening.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Thank you.
There you go. Texas Ranger manager Skip Schumacher right here on 105.3 The Fan. The one thing I did not like was the implication that I have to take some of the blame if you mess it up. I don't care.
Did you ever consider that?
No.
He's not wrong.
And I do not care for that.
That is, you know what? Here's one of the things that then that puts more pressure on me to not let you down. All
right. Right?
Because you've given me this opportunity.
And unfortunately, you know how judgy I can be.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Try not to be,
I will say this, the one time I made the ridiculous, and it's Mike's fault, he cheated, but the one time I made that bet with Mike,
right?
I do remember sitting front row right there with Brandon was you. You were like right there. You were like, I got to be here for this. It was awesome to have that kind of support, especially against Mike, which we weren't working on the same show at the time. He wasn't with us yet.
Right.
He was still a G-bag, but it was nice that we were a united front.
Now, on the practical baseball purposes, Skip said it will depend on how DeGrom feels today. Although I did appreciate his reference to, I feel like I've said trending in the right direction too many times that I don't want to lie. But that is the ideal circumstance, is that Rocker throws tonight and then you do get DeGrom back out there tomorrow. And then Gore, Bradford, for the time being Quantrill, although I'm really curious to see how Jack Leiter's rehab assignment goes, then maybe the next go around, like going into the White Sox series or the Brewers series, maybe you would see him again back up with the big club as a starter. And then Josh Young, it's still struggle with the running. He's not up to 100% right there. So you'd love to say a week, but I feel like he was pretty honest of, I don't really have a good timetable at this exact moment.
Here's the thing, Kevin, and it would feel nice for all of us, Alec included, and I think all Rangers fans, to know that those guys are back, right? That DeGrom's back, he's ready to go. Leiter's,
I did like his answer why do you believe your team can be better?
Yeah, I mean, that's his responsibility.
Yeah.
If you go out there and you just, do what Mike would do and be like, oh, why are we even here today, guys? We're going to lose. You know, remember he told us that
his
teammate one day was like, we're going to lose. You can't do that. You can't think that way. You can never think that way. So you got to have this, because if you think that way, your guys are going to think that way.
Yeah.
So you got to have them in this mindset of, we can accomplish, we can run through a wall. Nobody can stop us. But Kevin, you're bringing up the guys that you're hoping to get back. But the thing that is kind of always lingering is how long? How long can they be back? And will it give you long enough to make it through these last 30-something games? And also, will the performance be good enough in that stretch that they can get to the place they want to be? And then on top of that, you've talked about it many times, well, you're going to get smoked in the playoffs. And this was around trade deadline.
Yeah.
We were discussing that. Well, if you get to that point, and will they be healthy then too? And that's just something that we've seen Skip have to juggle this all season, right? He's had to do this all year long. Fortunately, he knows how to do it. You know, he's got a good idea what his team, the guys that'll step up for him.
Yeah. I mean, hell, you just lean on Cal Quantrill to get the job done.
Let him start every game.
Maybe not
in the playoffs.
I would just love to see some sustained positive momentum for the Rangers, because every time it feels like they're going to get it, it goes away. But to Skip's point, as he said, the division is what it is, which means they're still in a position to accomplish their postseason goals and go from there, which is fair.
Kevin, you have often said this is one of the most ridiculous plays in the history of baseball.
Mm.
From the 6-8-2, he gave me an idea. Throw the ball, have Corey intercept it, and toss it home like Jeter did in the playoffs.
I think that is the most overrated play in the history of baseball. I've watched that thing many times. I think he was going to get the runner either way.
Jeter needed the credit.
Yeah. The most ridiculous claim in the history
of
baseball.
See, John Smoltz knows.
Jeter needed
the credit.
Or
unless that's in response to me. And I know it was a smart play, and everyone's like, it's the most genius play I've ever seen. I'm like, eh. Whatever. All right, we're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and maybe you want to throw me into My Buddy's an Idiot. Go ahead and give me cut number five, if you will, because let's fire up My Buddy's an Idiot.
Back to Rincon. They'll run to the bag, toss it over. They were down, but never out. Bayon is going to Williamsport.
We're going to start by talking about Little League Baseball. In the Little League World Series. Don't worry. I can see how you would think I might go after some and maybe put the Little Leaguers in that. That's not what's happening. I respect Kalshi, underdog, trying to make their living and all of that, but Little League gamblers are idiots. What are we doing? Not only should you not bet on this, I do not approve of prop bets and stuff being open for Little League Baseball. Come on, dude. We've gone too far, and I love gambling.
This is the man that said you shouldn't get gamble on the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, and
yet
I stand
our boy
by
Joshua
that.
Is rich yeah. now.
What happened to him?
He doesn't work here anymore because he made so much money gambling on the Hall of Fame
he
game.
He definitely still works here.
I need to take notes.
Yeah. Did you not learn anything from this, Kevin?
I mean, clearly not. That's another flaw of me. I have trouble learning lessons.
You can trade on anything, Kevin.
But don't you think you should not be able to trade on that?
So.
I know they're not going to change their slogan to you can trade on anything except Little League Baseball. But they probably should.
Yeah, and it is weird that I guess because it's on TV and it's exposed to such a big audience that would be a capable thing. I'm watching some right now. It is very weird to me. But again, is it on them to provide that place, you know, to do it? Or is it on the people who are like, I am willing to wager on this? Like, that's how many people do you think were all the reason they probably did it, Kevin, is because there were already people in those stands saying, bet this kid hits a home run.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Because there are some gamblers out there, dude.
I have no doubt about that. And yes, I did think it was weird when you can gamble on when Jesus returns. But at least you're hopefully an adult making those decisions. It just seems odd to me to be like, hey, let's gamble on the success or failure of this 12-year-old.
Well, and I think there's one thing that you're definitely saying right here is how many times have we seen professional athletes say that they're getting messages, they're getting yelled at, they're getting people that are heckling them because of the losses there. These kids don't need that. They already have parents riding them. You know, that's bad enough.
Absolutely. Now, do you think the Seattle Seahawks are idiots? Perhaps this could go a couple of different ways. Per Alec, and probably somebody else, the Seahawks are signing Trayvon Diggs. Is that just because they like Trayvon Diggs, or they are actively in the midst of trying to get out of this other commitment that they had made?
Man, that's an interesting question, because Alec, you told us earlier that there was the coach, Mike McDonald, was doing like 58 things at one time, correct?
It was John Snyder, the GM.
Oh, Snyder, never mind, I'm sorry. It's Snyder, the GM. Okay, even better. So he then obviously believes that Diggs still has something? Or it's like he's got to believe that Diggs still has. That's too big of a name to just use him as somebody to get away from, right?
Yeah, or it's just a really, really low cost investment. Because after you've seen Diggs kind of bounce around, I bet this deal is for almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, if it works out, great. If not, we can move on quickly.
Because Diggs is trying to get a shot with anybody at this point.
Probably.
I mean, like, he's gone to a bunch of teams and nobody's bit. I mean, the Cowboys let him go. I mean, that tells you something. Cowboys don't do that very often.
Right.
So maybe, yeah, maybe that price is so low. I just, after what we saw and what appeared like the work ethic, Kevin, didn't it feel like towards the end of that season, Diggs was just kind of like, hey, man, I don't play this kind of football, and Eberflus isn't adapting to me. And that was kind of like a last-ditch effort to try and be like, it's not on me, it's on everybody else.
Right.
And I just don't know that the work ethic's there for him. So it's a good question about the idiot part of it.
Now, talking about people who like to pass the buck, we're going to go to ESPN. Get cup number 8 ready, please. Is ESPN an idiot because... this is a tribute that they're doing to Bill Rasmussen, and they have the big tribute graphic up and everything like that. And I'm going to let the audio tell you how that tribute went.
Wake up early to try to catch it on the news. So now we got sports all day, every day.
His legacy lives on.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to our humble abode, the DraftKings Thunderdome, on this Big Ball Tuesday, August 18th, 2026.
Couldn't even finish the tribute to one of the founders of ESPN because we had to make sure that we got to that Pat McAfee show right at the top of the hour. God forbid you took 5 extra seconds for the guy who helped create the network. Now, I know Pat McAfee pretty much owns the network now, and that's totally fine. But that felt kind of, I think shoddy would describe it best.
Who's that on?
I mean,
because Alec, you've dealt with hard outs. We've dealt with hard outs for many sure. times, and I'm just kind of curious on how the mechanics of all that work. Because I don't think it was McAfee that was like, "Get me on the air now."
No, neither do I.
I'm guessing, kind of funny though if it was.
Well, that would be weird. And like his show's about to start in 15 seconds, and he's like watching. He's like, "You better get done with this stupid tribute.
We'll
it's time for me. Yeah, it's time for me." Like, I don't think that was happening either. So he probably you just go when they tell you to go.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
And so it's different for us because we're literally sitting in the same studio, like with Sean and RJ and everything. But Pat McAfee is. Not that I just that was a really crap look for ESPN.
No, you're absolutely right, man. And I wonder if a little bit of that comes back at him. I am kind of curious of the mechanics of what producer screwed that up so bad.
Sure.
And was it the producer then, Alec? You think that would be the person that gets the hey man, what the F?
Or do you think it's going to be the on air host when they're like, I told you 10 is 10, and that's one of the things like we talk about. Alec gives us the hard out, but he doesn't say. But take an extra 7 seconds if it's important. No, it's the hard out's the hard out. Now, I think you maybe should have had a little bit of flex for that, but I know how the business works, too.
I would not put the tribute at the very end of the show going into a syndicated network program where you need to get out at a specific time.
Yeah.
I would have opened with that so you can massage the time as much as you need to. I think it was just ill-advised to have it at the end of the program whatsoever, so I'm going to blame the producers.
Jared just texted us, Sandler of Jared Sandler. He said, as a chronic rambler, I would tell you that I'm sure the people talking are at fault for not being able to hit their heart out. And that's fun because Jared will poke fun out of it himself. I will tell you this, as somebody who has done it before and still frequently has to do it sometimes, Kevin is the master at timing out 10 seconds and being able to get us out for Rangers games at just the right time.
Right.
Even though he knows I want to say goodnight, Kevin, and I'm like, I probably shouldn't anyway, but I still try. But you do, like, it's a special skill.
You got an hour, people.
He goes in, like, 2 hours before he's supposed to. He goes and finds time.is whatever.
Yes, time.is.
And then he times it all out, and he's doing the math in his head the whole time, and he's saying, all right, how many words per second? And it's a pretty unique thing. I'm very happy that he does it because it's not – you hear me. I dismount terribly all the time.
Well, one of the dumbest things that you would listen to us do, it's important, but I'll go to Alec and I'll be like, all right, Alec, time I've got 12:54, 30, 31, 32. And we'll like exchange, especially if we're on remotes. So it can be like, all right, you're spot on. Half a second short, whatever, but it's usually right on, so we can time it out just perfectly. Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse too much on this, but still FIFA. Kevin Lamour was let go as FIFA's chief operating officer after he claimed that Infantino's controversial World Cup sale plan had deceived people. So they got rid of him. The plan that everybody hated by the person that everyone seems to dislike who tried to shake down other organizations to go along with this plan. So they could get the World Cup final. It was like, you question me? fired. What the hell is FIFA doing?
So it's semantical then.
No, not semantical, Gavin Dawson. We're the KNC Masterpiece, and I feel like it's about
60 seconds on soccer.
No, today.
Let's give something away!
877-881-1053. Caller number 10 will win a four-pack of tickets to go see the Rangers play the Angels on Saturday at Globe Life Field. You can buy tickets from Rangers.com, or you can win them for free right now. 877-881-1053. Coming up next, it's the C Block.
You know what? We have a dinner tonight, guys.
Oh.
Nice place. We'll talk a little bit about that and some Cowboys next on The Fan.